In 1754, Taal Volcano blew its top and didn't stop for the next 6 months. As lightning crackled along its crater rim, ash fell from the sky in great torrents, eventually sealing the volcano off into a landlocked lake. When the smoke cleared and Taal quieted down, a poor species of sea snake found itself trapped in the lake. Now, sea snakes aren't supposed to live in lakes, it's right there in their name. But with its currents now cut off from the Pacific Ocean, Taal eventually lost its salinity, and this sea snake, with its narrow stripes and poisonous bite, had to evolve to live and breathe and swim in fresh water. 100 years after its great entrapment, a member of this species was scooped out from Taal by a visiting German ethnologist named Karl Gottfried Semper, who named it after himself. The locals called it Duhol Matapang, but in the science books, it would be forever known by the scientific name Hydrophis Semperi. Elsewhere in the Philippines, Carl Semper named three other species of land mollusks, or what you and I would call snails. But he didn't name them after himself. He named them after his Filipino assistant, Antonio Angara. Three snails now bear scientific names taken after the first name of Semper's capable right-hand man, Rhizota Antoni, Coclostyla Antoni, and Chlorea Antoni. In his memoirs, Semper heaped unexpected praise on Angara's initiative and scientific nerve. I say unexpected because visiting researchers like him often ignored or even actively insulted the local assistants, guides, and contacts who made their scientific work possible. But for Angara, Semper made an exception. My servant, he calls him, over and over again. A servant, loyal and proven, who collected the beautiful and the rare in remote islands and brought them to Semper to document. So Carl Semper was greatly disappointed that he couldn't bring along his servant in the next phase of his expedition. From the Philippines, Semper planned to rummage around another Spanish possession right next door. This was Palau, part of the Caroline Islands. Long claimed by Spain, this archipelago would soon become a diplomatic flashpoint between the Castilians and Semper's own homeland, Germany. As the crisis raged, some in Spain began to wonder, was Germany plotting to take over the Philippines? Welcome to the Colonial Department. This is the podcast where we take long-lost stories from Philippine colonial history and bring them to life. In this episode, we cast our eyes to a next-door neighbor edging so close to open conflict even a pope had to step in. This is Season 5, Episode 11, Sweet Carolines. The Caroline Islands are scattered over an immense stretch of water more than 3,500 kilometers wide. Over thousands of years, brave navigators plunged into the Pacific and settled into these and other islands across Oceania. The cultures they founded left behind tantalizing, enduring legacies. In one of the Caroline Islands known as Pohnpei, laborers dug up great columns of basalt and set them on the coast to create a great complex of 92 artificial islands linked by canals and protected by a wall that reached up to 25 feet. They call this floating capital the city of Nanmadol. When Europeans began exploring the Pacific in their galleons, many of them thought of these islands as simple way stations, pit stops on the way to greater treasures in the Spice Islands or the Philippines. Names familiar to us made their passage through them. Alvaro de Saavedra, Ruy Lopez de Villalobos, Miguel Lopez de Legazpi. And these islands began to appear in European charts. Finally, in 1686, the islands were all lumped together and baptized with a European name, Las Carolinas, after the Spanish King Charles II. In typical colonizer logic, the Spanish just naturally claimed the Carolines as their own, even if they made no great effort to settle there. Historian David Hanlon says that every European map over the next 300 years recognized these islands as Spanish territory. But the Carolines were Spain's in name only. With the exception of two attempts in the early 18th century to establish Catholic missions,
neither Madrid nor the Viceroyalty of New Spain, which had early administrative jurisdiction over Spain's distant Pacific possessions, showed much interest in the area,
wrote Hanlon.
Spain, in effect, acted as an absentee landlord.
Though they now had a Spanish name on foreign maps, outsiders from the West left the inhabitants of the Carolines blissfully alone. Except they really didn't. The natives of Pohnpei called white-skinned Westerners ghosts of the open ocean, and over the next 200 years, these phantoms would wash up in the Carolines in fits and starts. A surveyor from Russia, a refugee from Ireland, a merchant from Salem. Then, by the start of the 1800s, the ships of whalers and exporters began to regularly weigh anchor in the Carolines. Bridging the world of the native chiefs with the world of Western commerce was an assortment of settlers, fugitives, and outcasts. Living in the fringes of both worlds, they were a rough and tumble crowd whose quarrels often ended with a dead body or two. A Protestant missionary once described these Caroline expats as pirate rovers, grasping traders, and lawless beachcombers. But the beachcombers answered to no flag. Unlike the Philippines to the west, there was no foreign governor general or armed occupation force laying claim to the islands in the name of their king or emperor or whatever fancy title you had back in Europe. That all changed in the 1880s. The Germanic states had just united into a German empire. Now, they wanted to flex their national spirit with an overseas colony of their own. As one German law professor wrote at the time,
"Colonies are merely the expression of the spirit of enterprise of strong nations. All truly advanced peoples, from the Phoenicians to the English, have founded colonies."
Teutonic eyes turned to the vast island group in the Pacific, where their merchants had been trading for copra and coconut oil for years. In August of 1885, German Chancellor Otto von Bismarck announced his intention of annexing the Carolines. Warships steamed into the archipelago and marines came ashore to raise the German flag, to broker treaties with natives, and to nail boards painted in German colors outside the houses of the indigenous high chiefs with the words "German Protectorate" written on the front. For 300 years, Spain didn't care about the Carolines. But now, with German banners fluttering in the Caroline breeze, they suddenly cared very, very much. Right away, Spain dispatched two warships, the Manila and the San Quentin, as a show of force against any intrusion in the Carolines. Germany responded by sending their own naval cruiser Iltis, as well as the gunboat Albatross. And so the race was on. The Manila and the San Quentin steamed in hard from their naval base in the Philippines. But in almost every cove, port, and beach where the Spanish weighed anchor, the Marines found that the Germans had beaten them to the punch.
The German ship Iltis soon left the national colors on 11 different island groups,
wrote historian and priest Francis Hesel,
while its sister ship, the Albatross, visited other islands as far east as Cosrae. Germany had seemingly won the race for the Carolines.
The Spaniards howled in protest. In Madrid, mobs converged on the German embassy. Spanish intellectuals wondered out loud if the Carolines were just the first step in a dastardly German plan and if the Philippines would be next. Diplomatic messages between the two empires grew increasingly tense. Germans, however, were confident in their claim to the island group, thanks in no small part to a travel account and a lecture delivered by none other than our old sea snake catching friend from Taal, Carl Gottfried Semper. 23 years before, Semper had visited Palau on the western edge of the Carolines and reported that Spain's presence there verged on non-existent. Whether he supported the German occupation of the Carolines or not, pro-colonialists in Germany used Semper's experiences to bolster their case for occupation. Still, Bismarck was alarmed at the ruckus the Caroline crisis was kicking up. Across Europe, there were rumors that Spain and Germany would even go to war over these Pacific islands. To pull back tensions, Bismarck asked Pope Leo XIII to mediate the dispute. Spain jumped at this chance at the negotiation table. Of course, a Catholic pope would support a Catholic country. And that he did. Within months, the pope got the two countries to sit down and sign an agreement to settle the question of the Carolines. On paper, Spain came out on top. The agreement affirmed Spain's imagined historic right to rule over the archipelago, while all Germany got were trade and naval rights. But perhaps Bismarck's papal move was smarter than Spain gave him credit for. After all, Germany had gotten exactly what it wanted, while the Castilians were left with the hard work of actually governing the Carolines. In 1886, the warship Manila reappeared in the Carolines to fly the Spanish flag over the islands, which it didn't get to do the last time it was there. In Pohnpei, the site of Nan Madol, locals watched the Marines nail a Spanish flag to a coconut tree. Settlers began to move in. In reports to their bosses in Manila, they called Pohnpei La Colonia, the colony. A colony reporting to a colony, it was like the Philippines and Mexico all over again. The Caroline Crisis cast a long shadow over the Philippines and turned Spain jumpy. In Sulu, German ships faced a sudden blockade to prevent them from trading or making deals with the Sultan. In Calamba, Jose Rizal was tagged as a German spy and an agent of Otto von Bismarck. In Madrid, a historian asserted Spain's rights to the Philippines, the Carolines, and the Marianas Islands because of the so-called right of discovery. Finally, an interesting footnote to the Caroline Crisis happened in 1898 when the Philippines had finally thrown off the shackles of Spanish colonialism. At the Malolos Congress, 193 delegates, speaking for every province in the Philippines, gathered in a church to draft the new country's constitution. Among the delegates was a man named Isidro Chanco, who was listed as the representative of Palaos, the Spanish name for Palau, the westernmost island of the Carolines, the same island visited by Carl Semper decades before. Right at the birth of our independence, Palau was there, hovering over the proceedings like a ghost from the open ocean. Thanks for listening to this episode of The Colonial Department. Find us on Instagram and TikTok for more history, behind the scenes, and non-fiction book recommendations. If you want to know more about another interesting historical link between the Philippines and another Pacific island, listen to Season 4, Episode 2, What Happened at Hanapepe. Leo Mangubat wrote, narrated, and produced this episode. My usual voiceover partner in crime, Anya Ong Reyes, is on extended leave, so I also read the quotations from sources. References include 1. Nathaniel Parker Weston's 2012 dissertation on the scientific, academic, and nationalist connections between Germany and the Philippines, which he later expanded into a 2021 book published by Ateneo Press entitled Spectres of Germany. 2. Francis Hezel's Colonial History of the Caroline Islands, entitled Strangers in Their Own Land and published in 1995 by the University of Hawaii Press. 3. David Hanlon's History of Pohnpei, entitled Upon a Stone Altar and published in 1988 by the University of Hawaii Press.